Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they absolutely did predictively get it correct in so many different ways. This is Tom Novoulos, your host, and I am delighted that you are here again this week as we talk about law, leaders, and liberty lost. Now, I want to open by saying there's a lot of really great stuff that is happening. And I don't want to just call it stuff. What I mean is that there are businesses that are actually functioning and operating in God's principles. There's local and national leaders that are out there that are operating in God's principles. They're doing it from a perspective of being able to apply the biblical truth and principles in their daily lives. And then what does that mean to utilize and apply those principles in business, in education, as well as in government? And there may be a few out there that are doing that within the judiciary realm as well. Bureaucrats? Well, I don't know. I'm sure there are some, but at the federal level, even at the state level, there aren't a whole lot that are acting in a just manner. Well, and we're not talking about the justice of the justice movement that's out there either. We're talking about what is it to truly understand what is God's justice and how does it work? And sometimes God's justice is not what humans call fair. It's just not, because it's God's justice. But what I want to open up with is that the whole idea, if you go to samueladamsreturns.net and you get the newsletter with all the various references for this week, you will really get loaded with information. You will gain knowledge. And as we'll read here in a little bit, is that without knowledge, you cannot take and make good judgments, nor be a good leader that can then help develop good law and keep liberty ringing strong. So I have to ask a question, and some of what I've been talking about here is that when you look at law, liberty, and leaders, and liberty lost, it's all interrelated. And it's based on who is or what is or who has a dominant religion. What is dominant in society for individuals as well as society in general? I've talked to you in the past about the trans religion. And there's some folks that were arguing on social media that it's not a religion. Well, sorry, it is. It is a religion. And it's because that has become their god in the fact that they are taking and throwing out the God of the Bible and the God of all creation. So what religion and its God has authority over you? That is the real question. Who has authority? What has authority? What is your final authority? That's the bottom line. That's what it comes down to. Because if there is no greater authority over you, then it's either you're the final authority. Now you just became God. You became your own God within the framework that you live. Very interesting how that works with a lot of different political leaders and bureaucrats, and we're even seeing it in some of those churches that do not use biblical framework to understand the God of creation and therefore support all of the various evils and sins that God, quite frankly, says he hates. So it's interesting, isn't it? Well, here we are. We're seeing that the constitutional mechanisms of law and lawmaking are now dependent more on the entrenched state religion of humanism. A lot of folks talk about it. There's, we can look at a number of solid pastors that are talking about the state religion of humanism. You know, that's just what it is. There's no other thing that you can say. And how do we know it? How do we know that that's what it is and all of its derivatives? What are these various derivatives that are there for environmentalism, transgenderism, all the other isms that are in place? Well, let me throw out a couple examples for you. And these are recent court cases, and I have a few other examples that I want to mention as well. And the links are right there at SamuelAdamsReturns.net in the newsletter. Is judges scold teachers for challenging gender identity anti-racism policies. The judge is scolding parents and teachers about a judge saying you can't go against gender identity. You cannot go against the anti-racism policies, the equal justice insanities from a judge. Here's another one. Judge threatens parents with massive penalties for challenging school anti-racism dogma. Same thing. Another judge in another location. The links are there. So we also see moves in various states to fully remove memorials for the Ten Commandments. Take them out of the courtrooms, take them out of the schools, they've been out of the schools for a while, but take them out of any government location whatsoever. Well, they're doing that in the name of religious tolerance? Really? The Ten Commandments in principle are the very fundamentals of how you live. How do you live in society? Well, this has been, the systemic national cultural, political, and religious inculcation of evil by invitation. There's an article by that title there, and I have that in the second paragraph of the newsletter for you to go look at. And that's the article by Ray DiLorenzo. Very interesting how evil, as we well know, is that if you do not invite God into your life, into your home, into your business, and I mean the biblical God, the God of creation, Jesus Christ, the Savior of all that is creation, well, then you're inviting something else. You're inviting someone else. What are you doing? You're inviting evil to come in and to ultimately rule within that framework that you're a part of. So ultimately, what we're having to see here is that the law reflects leaders who are manifesting the will of the national religious authority. So your God or gods who guide your decisions over others. Yes, it's not only the elected. It's not only the elected. We're seeing it very strongly in the full-blown O'Biden administration. We see it at every bureaucratic level that is there. We see it in business leaders, the likes of Bezos and Steve Jobs at the time, and now what's his name, Gates, and so on and so forth. These business leaders, come on, judges, attorneys. We're seeing it all over with those who not only enforce the law, but they develop law and regulations and policies. So it's a broad brush. Let me go ahead and jump over and look at a few other things. I just wanted to tie some of this together, and the links are all there. And we can take a look at them. That one of the ones that just popped today that so when we talk about inviting evil, this one just, when I talked to Kath about it, I went, we are a sick society. So here is the Fauci place. Whoever says, Fauci's not there anymore, but NIH, the National Institute of Health, is using a woman's health grant to provide funding for a study that is actively recruiting 18-year-olds to experiment with the unknown cardiovascular side effects of removing young men's testicles. What is that all about? This yo-yo, he's an assistant professor of medicine at the University of Colorado's Anschutz Medical Campus. What he's doing is he's doing a study and doesn't even know what the results are, what he's trying to look for. He's dealing with these things. What's the side effects of castrating somebody, especially from cardiovascular? So they're looking to pay 18-year-olds to castrate them. Wow. This guy's big thing is, well, it's, you know, all for the trans movement. You know, see what trans women appear to have great risk for cardiovascular disease, blood clots compared to non-trans adults. What is with that? So that's one. It goes back to, what do you believe? What is it that you believe? Here ties in is Biden's education secretary, Cardona, refuses to tell Congress what is a woman. He can't define it. And then when you look at the picture and the reference, he's got women sitting behind him. I mean, I can count four women sitting behind this guy, and none of the congressional leaders that were asking the questions said, hey, look behind you, dummy. What is those? What are those people? Can't you define a woman? And what's interesting to me and striking is that they never asked the question, what is a man? Because then they could tell them, hey, why don't you go ahead and take a look at yourself in the mirror sometime. What is a man? No, they don't want to answer that because their god of trans is taking and holding their tongue from truth. Anyway, as I continue with all of this, there's more. I want to get into the law, and we're going to get into that second segment. And as always, we're never going to get through everything. So you do have to. I wrote a lot this time in the newsletter. So I would highly suggest that you go there because it explains a whole lot more there. But what I want to read to you was written by Abraham Kuyper in 1897. And he says, one desire has been the ruling passion of my life. One high motive has acted like a spur upon my mind and soul. And sooner than that I should seek escape from the sacred necessity that is laid upon me, let the breath of my life fail me. It is this, that in spite of all worldly opposition, God's holy ordinances shall be established again in the home, in the school, and in the state for the good of the people, to carve, as it were, into the conscience of the nation the ordinances of the Lord, to which the Bible and creation bear witness until the nation pays homage again to God. I've talked about Kuyper a number of times, and he was not only a pastor, he was an educator, and he was also a political leader. So you can go back to some of the other programs and find references on him. But as we move into the next segment, I want to talk about a book that I came about, and I've heard about it, and I've heard excerpts on different aspects of it, but I want to quote some areas about law to you from this book. I'm not going to tell you who wrote the book or what the title is until after I finish up with the quotes. But one thing is clear, is that Sam Adams clearly understood that biblical relationship to living, every aspect of life. And so as an anti-federalist, he understood the truth And that's what I want to relate to you. So come on back in the next segment. Welcome back to the second segment of Samuel Adams Returns. Those anti-federalists, they did. They got it correct. What I wanted to go through with you and just jump right into it is some quotes out of a book that I was reading on the law, and in specific to biblical law. And how does that relate to everything that is going on? So let me ask you, as I left that last segment, in relationship to who's your God? Who is it that has the ultimate authority? Even if it's the Constitution that is the ultimate authority over you, then that's not enough, in my opinion. And that's not enough because then the Constitution becomes your God. And the Constitution is a good high order for taking and composing, bringing together what is law or what is a framework for our society in these United States, but it's not the highest authority. It can't be, because if it was, then you end up with everything that we're getting today in the likes of what we have, a Fetterman, dazed and confused Fetterman, returns to Capitol Hill after 2 months absence. We have all of those that are just legislating or arguing, debating, taking money from all of the, those folks that want to spread all that money around. You know who they are. You know what they are. The Pfizers, the Disneys, all the different special interest groups. Yeah, you know those lobbyists. You got it right. Now, when you take a look at that, that framework is insufficient if the individuals that go into office can't hold to their oath. And we're going to talk about that in a few minutes, hopefully, if I get through all of this in time. But what I wanted to bring to you is just this idea that there's quotes here that just talk and go through what is it that we should take and address. So let's start with this one. And this is one that I've talked about before, so I was really appreciating the fact that this kind of brought together ideas and concepts that I was able to derive from understanding scriptural, biblical law, and so on. But he starts out with this: all thinking appeals to authority. All thinking appeals to authority. And the question to ask of any man or of any philosophy or religion is simply this: what is its authority? To what does it appeal as the foundation, the basis of its thinking? People who profess to believers in democracy also have their own brand of authoritarianism. They claim that democracy is the true way of life and the true form of civil government because it rests on true foundation, the people. Ancient faith in democracy is summed up in the Latin phrase vox populi, vox Dei. The voice of the people is the voice of God. The people are thus the God of democracy. No law, no constitution, no religious faith can be permitted to stand in the way of the will of the people. The will of the people incarnates itself in a governing elite who express this general will infallibly. There is a direct connection between the democratic thinking of Rousseau and Karl Marx's dictatorship of the proletariat, the people. The authority of any system of thought is the God of that system. Men, by denying the God, cannot escape God. God is the inescapable reality and the inescapable category of thought, when men deny the one true God, they do it only to make false gods. That's the end of that quote for now. But can you relate? Can you see how it is with all of those who claim democracy, 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 the Democrats, and all that they say? They are their own form of what? Authoritarian. Now, this comes from a book that is titled Law and Liberty, and this is the chapter Law and Authority by R.J. Rushdoony. Now, many people that are out there, especially in the modern Christian element, really don't like Rushdoony a lot, but so far, everything that I've been finding on Rushdoony, and once again, I'm a latecomer to his writings, I find very biblically succinct, because you remember, I studied separately from all of these other writers. I'm not claiming anything of incredible insight. It's just a common sense of God's word that these are true. When we look at society and we look at those that claim democracy, they act what? The voice of the people is the voice of God. They act from that ancient perspective that there is no other God but the people. And so what is it that the people sway? And we know that democracy, our founders rejected it. So very, very interesting. So what I'm doing this week is challenging for me, in that I'm trying to identify, and not with some pronoun, but more a direct term, saying that political solutions for what troubles the United States are fundamentally useless until every elected person and bureaucrat think, act, and rule themselves, and then rule within the scope of constitutionalism with the higher or under the highest authority of Christ, with biblical principles leading them. For the most part, that's what occurred at the foundation of this nation. It was those biblical principles that led the minds of the men, for the most part, that created this nation. So the law itself, here's one, something favorite. One of my favorite authors that many people who have attended different classes that and lectures that I've given says the law perverted the law, and in its wake, all the collective forces of the nation, the law, I say, not only diverted from its proper direction, but made to pursue one's entirely contrary. The law becomes a tool of every kind of avarice instead of being its check. The law, guilty of that very iniquity which it was its mission to punish. Truly, this is a serious fact. If it exists, and one to which I feel bound to call attention to for my fellow citizens, we hold from God the gift which, as far as we are concerned, contains all others, life, physical, intellectual, and moral life. But life cannot support itself. He who has bestowed it has entrusted us with the care of supporting it, of developing it, and of perfecting it. To that end, he has provided us with a collection of wonderful faculties. He has plunged us into the midst of a variety of elements. It is by the application of our faculties to these elements that the phenomena of assimilation and of appropriation, by which life pursues the circle which has been assigned to it, are realized. Existence, faculties, assimilation, in other words, personality, liberty, property, This is man. It is of these three things that it may be said, apart from all demagogue subtlety, that there are an anterior and superior to all human legislation. It is not because men have made laws that personality, liberty, and property exist. On the contrary, it is because personality, liberty, and property exist beforehand that men make laws. This was written by Bastiat in his book, The Law, originally published in French in 1850, and then brought into English in 1853. He starts out the whole book with the law perverted. My friends, is that not what we're experiencing right now, the perversion of law in every form? It's so real here in these United States. It's almost unreal. It's uncanny to the extent that we've seen lawlessness come into play. Every level of governance is culpable to everything that's going on, and this includes within the family and the churches, especially within the churches. Families that allow their children to be mutilated and abused defy the laws of nature and nature's God. Where is it that you take and you, any other animal out there sexually mutilates their children? There may be some animals out there that eat their children. Well, that's what's going on then. Yeah. So those parents that allow that mutilation are no different than the animals that eat their children. Churches allow this from every form of deviance from biblical truth that defies the laws of nature's and nature's God. They defy the law of God in general, and they call themselves churches. They are a religion. They're religions of their father, the devil. Very simple. Jesus even said that. He said that to, the Pharisees? Their God, or their gods, their religions, as we read from Rush Dooney's quotes, are their final authority for bureaucratic rule, church rule, local and national regulations, and ultimately state and national laws. What do they believe? Who's their final authority? It's all based on what their religion is. What about you? What's your religion? Where's your final authority even in the concept of that? Or, as we looked at earlier, is it going back to what Rush Dooney was talking about? It's what? The people are gods. Oh. So even all adjudication by various judges, you know, who's their God? Their God is of the humanistic national religion and its various sects, S-E-C-T-S. So what we see is that we have lost leaders, which takes us into the third segment. I mean, here in this last minute and a half, we'll just kind of jump into it right there. And this is where I brought out and started out with the leadership that, you know, here it is. Biden's education secretary even refuses to define what a woman is. Wow. And here you have in the UK that their prime minister knows 100% of women don't have penises. I mean, that's the article there. The link is there. Well, at least he knows more than what the Miguel Cardona knows. Isn't that amazing? And yet they have all that wokeness over there in the UK. Wow. It's just maddening with all of that. And we're going to go into more. So the clarification are the basic fundamentals of even biology, that the God of creation is the final authority in all things. But when you have leaders that no longer will recognize that, then it ultimately comes down to, as we're going to talk about shortly in a sermon on what is a leader from back in the 1600s here in America, that without understanding those godly principles, you have chaos, you have destruction, and you have slavery. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to this last segment of Samuel Adams Returns. This is Tom Novulis, your host. I highly encourage you to go to samueladamsreturns.net and look at the all the program notes, all the references that are there for this week's podcast, blog. And, you know, once again, go to the other social media that is there. If you want to see my smiling face and get the expressions that go along with the words. So it's maddening as far as I'm concerned. And what we were talking about in the last segment, and again, for those that only get the first and second segment, please go to the website. First and third segment, go to the website to get the second segment. And the madness that we're talking about is all that with the environmental religion. We're talking about leaders and their religious views, and what does that mean with the slavery of others? And here you have an article there that I have, is the New York mayor goes to war against meat and dairy as his climate agenda escalates. And here's a quick quote on that. The Adams administration, and not John Adams, and definitely not when Sam was governor, but in New York City, that Adams administration has announced a plan to begin tracking the carbon footprint created by household food consumption. This will aid the fascist mayor's goals to reduce their food-based emissions by 33% in 2030. Please note that the 33% goal is specifically related to food, the food the people of New York choose to consume. Further note that if you live in New York, Mayor Eric Adams will track your food consumption. He's going to track what you eat. Interesting. Take that for what it is. I don't have time to delve into that one too much because I'd have a lot to say. So elected are defying not only natural morality and common sense, but the biblical God's authority over all creation. Washington State House approves a bill authorizing hiding of children seeking transgender medical intervention from parents. So taking parental rights away for their God of transgenderism, even taking children away, giving them in Oregon and Washington and the Pacific Northwest, waste is what it's become, Northwest, but it's a North Waste, is taking children away if the parents will not take and allow them to transition. So we have to look then now to industry. And as I opened the program with, there are godly leaders that are out there in business. There's some up in Idaho and Moscow. We know that for a fact. There's others that are out there that in the links you'll see a number of them. But what do we have? Specifically the medical industry. Here, in talking about Idaho in particular, is that first off, hospital sues the attorney general over probe into transgender care services. So a hospital suing the attorney general over that. And then when we look at the subversion, pure subversion by industry, the medical industry, and this is in Idaho, where St. Luke's there in, I think, the Spokane, Spokane Valley, but in Idaho around, I think it's in Boise, that St. Luke's plots end run around new law protecting children from gender mutilation. They are making ways for Idaho children to take and go to other states to be mutilated because of the law there. Lost liberty, it all comes down to, where is that cornerstone? Where is the creeds that were the cornerstone of the American foundation? So I would say that the creed, because the majority of the people were Reformed Calvinist in the early days of this foundation of this nation, that the founder's creed was the Westminster Confession and the catechism that went with that. And I want you to consider this because I think it's important. So I'm going to take you through real fast. And this is on Christian Liberty and Christian Consciences, chapter 20, as it was. And this would have been as it was in the 1646 version of the Westminster Confession. And here's what it says. And because the powers which God hath ordained and the liberty which Christ hath purchased are not intended by God to destroy, but mutually to uphold and preserve one another, they who, upon pretense of Christian liberty, shall oppose any lawful power or the lawful exercise of it, whether it be civil or ecclesiastical, resist the ordinance of God. So you resist those who resist the ordinance of God. And for their publishing of such opinions or maintaining of such practices as are contrary to the light of nature or to the known principles of Christianity, whether concerning the faith, worship, or conversation, or to the power of godliness, or such erroneous opinions and practices as either in their own nature or in the manner of publishing or maintaining them are destructive to the external peace and order which Christ hath established in the church. They may lawfully be called to account and proceeded against by the censure of the church and by the power of the civil magistrate. Now, I have a link there to the American version that occurred in 1787. And from that American version, what was struck was the last statement, and by power of the civil magistrate. So this was a significant impact on future and why we had a split, especially in the Presbyterian Church, around civil magistrates and what authority they had. They had no authority over ecclesiastical issues, but they did have authority if there was violation on a general purpose and writings against that which was godly, godly-minded. So what it means is that, and what we're seeing here, because of the gods of the humanism, and what we saw through all of the different churches, which I can't get in, I just won't have time to get into everything, is that all meaning for the elected, the bureaucrats, the military, and so on, who take an oath, there's no accountability anymore. No accountability. Because what good is the oath? I mean, who's going to look at it? The church isn't going to uphold it, and there's no going to be no moral established system except for what? The people as God. So also out of that confession on lawful oaths and vows. Now, this is very, very important. Whoever taketh an oath ought duly to consider the weightiness of so solemn an act, and therein to avouch nothing but what he is fully persuaded is the truth. Neither may any man bind himself by oath to anything but what is good and just, and what he believeth so to be, and what he is able and resolved to perform. Yet it is a sin to refuse an oath touching anything that is good and just, being imposed by lawful authority. Once again, the whole last sentence was struck. So why do we have oath breakers? Well, there you have it. Even in the pulpits, going away from this connection. So what happened to leaders? What happened to leaders and liberty lost? What's going on with all of that? Again, you're going to have to go to SamuelAdamsReturns.net and read everything that I compiled in there. So the Westminster Confession of 1646 was watered down, very simply, by the American version. So there's a writing here that I don't have time to get into because I want to jump, but let me put it to you this way. is that from 1660 to 1789, the humanists took the fundamental doctrines of Calvinism and secularized them. They stripped these ideas of all biblical theological content and produced a new man-centered worldview, 1660 to 1789, which became dominant in the West. First, they took the doctrine of the sovereignty of God and made it the sovereignty of nature and nature's finest product, the autonomous man. The twin idols of nature and history again became the idols of man as they have been throughout pagan history. Second, the Calvinist doctrine of the priesthood of all believers became the foundation of modern democratic theory. Beginning with the levelers of Cromwell's period, Calvinism's concept of the right of laity to vote in the church became the election model for politics. And then lastly, what was held in that and what happened was that the Calvinist view of God's law and man-given ability to recognize it and apply it to the world became the foundation of modern science and technology. And then lastly, in all of that, the idea of God's sanctions in history, of blessings and curses, became in the writings of the anti-Calvinist Scottish common sense rationalists, the concept of the impersonal market forces of supply and demand. And then the Enlightenment came out of all of that. There's more there, so much more. But can you get the picture of what's going on in the minds of leaders? Because when we removed those biblical concepts, then what's left? What's left? The last 3 minutes that I have here, I want to refer you to the link that I have for Samuel Willard's The Character of a Good Ruler. Please go read. I referenced it before. I'm probably going to keep referencing it. Is that he lays out what it is for a good ruler. And in these last couple of minutes, I don't have all the time that I wanted to read a number of this to you. But in finality, he writes in this one section is that a good ruler in its characteristics must be one who prefers the public benefit above all private and separate interests whatsoever. Every man in his place owes himself to the good of the whole, and if he does not so devote himself, he is unjust. And he who either to advance himself or to be revenged on another will push on injurious laws or pervert the true intention of such as are in force is an unjust man. And he who is under the influence of a narrow spirit will be ready to do so as occasion offers. Just in that paragraph alone, I think of the Biden administration and all the bureaucrats that are out there that are coming against all of those who believe in the Constitution, who believe in Christ, who are Christians, who are either solid, reformed Protestants like myself and others, or even some conservative Catholics that they're going after. Or look at what Donald Trump, you know, hey, Donald Trump is what Donald Trump is, but he was fighting against the swamp. But here we have instead people that are of special interest. That's what they're above. They then are unjust. They're not devoted to the good of all. They're revengeful. And what? They push on injurious laws or pervert the true intention of such that are in force. Talk about environmentalism for one. Well, ladies and gentlemen, what it comes down to is, once again, who's your authority? What's your final authority? Where is it that you place that? And how do you live it? How do you act it? How do you then make decisions in relationship to who or what is your authority? Come on back next week when Sam Adams returns.